Blog Talk Radio.
Howdy, Rays fans. How the hell are you? Steve Big Sweat Billmeyer here, host of tonight's episode of Racing with Big Sweat. Glad to have y'all tune in. Glad you're here with us. We think we've got a good show for you tonight. Got a couple of hot shoe local short track racing drivers on hand we're going to talk with tonight. Might learn a little something. I usually do every night, so stick around, hang out with us, enjoy a cold beverage, and let's get this show on the road. Let me check in with my partners in crime first. My producer, the man that makes all this possible and gives me a platform to talk from, Mr. CJ Sports. How you doing tonight, CJ?
Not too bad, not too bad. Just glad to be able to tune in and hang out with you guys tonight.
Always a pleasure to have you here. And how about my co-host, Chris Creighton? You hear the yellow caution flag?
Yeah, how about you there, crew chief? I'm here. We hanging out down here in Mississippi. You know, the weather's always pretty down here.
Absolutely. Can't
pretty rough.
The south. It's
sometimes it's raining. Sometimes it's the heat's so bad you can't stand it. Sometimes it's so cold that your nipples fall off. You know, it's always interesting. Weather in Mississippi never is its own entertainment. It never fails you. If you want to see change in weather in Mississippi, wait 5 minutes. We'll tell you what it is.
That's all you got to do is hang out because it'll be changing soon.
That's right.
How you been, bud? How's things in Mississippi?
Well, they've slowed down a little bit, but I tell you what, last weekend Jackson had a race, 109 cars turned out. They're opening up old track up in North Mississippi, been known as the baddest bull ring in the South, Columbus Speedway. It's been closed for about a year now, and a gentleman by the name of Rod Taylor is taking on the responsibility of opening that track back up. And Steve, I was talking with another promoter today, and this man is thinking outside the box. He's bringing in a Jumbotron. He's also going to race Friday night. So if he works that Jumbotron the right way, that could be added new entertainment and something that's definitely outside the box in dirt track racing. But one thing I've heard from fans over and over again is I was eating my popcorn or I went to the restroom and I missed the wreck or I missed what happened. And so bringing that kind of technology into dirt track racing may be beneficial. We'll see. But they're opening the gates up next week for a one-year event. They're under lease there, and they have to race a race this year in order to keep the lease binding. So everybody, if you're around this area, y'all go turn out to North Mississippi up there at Columbus Speedway and go give our friends a great night of racing this coming weekend.
Definitely sounds like a promoter that's got his, like you said, thinking outside the box, got his mind on different ways to make things happen. That's always good. Good man for the fans to have.
That's, you know, to give further more to that, I was talking with a promoter, and, you know, it's one thing to go buy a Jumbotron. It's another thing to know how to use it and where it's going to be beneficial. And so that's going to be interesting to see for those of us sitting back to, you know, eventually you'll find out kind of how much he paid for it and then how it's going to be utilized. And I tell you what, it could really open up the door. We've talked about indoor racing. Well, indoor racing with Jumbotron, and I tell you what, you're moving right on up there in the entertainment side, and that's what it's going to take in racing to survive. You can watch that by these bigger series. They're just, people are not turning out to the tracks, and this is supposed to be the championship. And you know, even baseball, if you have a team that doesn't really show up, you know, the fans don't really show up year-round, if they get in the playoffs, normally those stadiums pack out. This is not the case in racing right now, and we need to find and direct the problem and get it fixed quickly. Your thoughts on that, Steve?
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. I'll be interested to see how that works out and if it catches on with other tracks. So keep us informed. And I see our first guest is here with us, so they don't want to talk to me. They want to talk to him, so let's bring him out. He's a asphalt super late model driver, very successful one, too, from what I understand. So let's welcome Frank Giovanni to the show. Frank, how you doing tonight, buddy?
Hey, Big Sweat. Doing pretty well tonight. I'm glad I'm able to come on tonight. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure, bud. Always enjoy talking with you. Clue us in. How'd your season go this year?
2016, I mean, it went pretty well. We had our ups and downs. We ran strong in a lot of the big races this year, but we had some bad luck. We were leading the race, two races actually, at Toledo Speedway, and we actually cut a right front tire both races. So some pretty unfortunate luck, but we had the cars rolling pretty good at Flat Rock Speedway. We had one feature win, quite a few top fives, but we had one wreck at the end of the season that kind of hurt our championship hopes. But we did lead the point series for most of the season. Like I said, just a little bit of bad luck there. Got caught up in a wreck, and it's a lot of competition at Flat Rock. So if you have one bad night, might hurt you. So we ended up third and championship points at Flat Rock. So a good season, but we were hoping for a little bit better.
Yeah, we're always hoping for better. I understand that. Didn't I see where you ran the ARCA race at Toledo?
Yeah, I was able to run one ARCA race this year. I was racing with Hixon Motorsports, and I had my debut at Toledo Speedway, so it was a good opener for me. I'm pretty familiar with the Speedway, so and that was a good experience. And I wasn't going to do it if it was going to be just a start and park situation. So I talked to Wayne Hixon, and he said, if you want to run the whole race, you're welcome to do that. So it was a little bit different driving style with those cars. They're quite a bit heavier than the late models, so you got to use quite a bit more brake. And it's more momentum racing than it is the late models, where you're just turning with the throttle. ARCA cars are more finesse, I would say. You have to roll through the corners and get back on the gas a little bit easier. But
Go ahead.
I was going to say just a little bit about the race.
That was my next question. I was going to ask you, you know, how different is it driving an ARCA car compared to the super late model, where the super late model is pretty much the top of the food chain late model as far as refinements and steering, suspension, and horsepower and such. Was it a big adjustment to go from one to the other?
It's not a huge adjustment. The biggest thing, like I said, was the weight, the actual weight of the car. So more, like I said, you have to roll the car through the corner and you need to get on the brakes a little bit harder. That's the biggest difference. Adjustability, I guess, from what I've seen and what we did in the pits, it was a little bit less adjustable compared to late models. I mean, late models, you can adjust just about anything, where the ARCA car is more, you know, spec. You really couldn't fine-tune adjust as quite as much as you could on the Supers.
Where do you base your racing out of? What areas do you usually run at?
We're out of Mount Clemens, Michigan, but most of the Outlaw Super Late Model shows are based out of Michigan, Ohio, and Indiana.
Yeah, I've noticed that's where a lot of Super Late Model asphalt racing is in Michigan. It seems to be the top tier of racing there. What are some of the tracks you run there? You run Berlin?
Our home tracks are Flat Rock and Toledo. That's where we run the regular series. There's a few other tracks around, like Kalamazoo. Berlin's another one that has an Outlaw Super Late Model class. Also, there's a few special events at Auto City Speedway as well as Dixie Speedway. And those are all Michigan-based tracks.
Yeah.
You can also go down to Ohio where we run Sandusky Speedway. There's Midville Speedway. There's quite a few other tracks, Ohio and Indiana, that you can run the outlaw cars.
How many races do you usually run per year?
Well, our season starts early April, and then we pretty much end up our season the end of September. This year, I think we got in 15, so I'm right around 15, 16 races per year, depending on funding and things like that. So right around that, around 15.
Steve, I've got a couple questions for him.
Go ahead.
Okay, Frank, are these cars, are they pretty dependable? I mean, do they last a few years, or is technology moving to the point to where you have to upgrade pretty soon? I mean, you're at the top level of your game being in super late models. How consistent are these cars year in, year out?
Hey, CJ. Hey, yeah, that's a good question. These cars, yeah, I mean, the way that technology is changing in racing, these cars, I would say after about maybe 2 years, you're pretty much, there's new technology coming in. You have to start thinking about upgrading at that point. Also, just with the lightweight, I mean, everything on these cars are so lightweight now. To make a car last 2 years is also tough. You have to maintain everything, you know, with a fine-tooth comb. So making sure your suspension parts especially are well-maintained, all your drivetrain needs to be in tip-top shape. So as far as everything being super lightweight, they're hard to maintain, and the technology changes so fast you have to keep up. It's actually pretty amazing.
Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, these cars are pretty impressive. They're kind of unlimited. They carry a lot of technology and a lot of new stuff. Frank, I know y'all run rack and pinion steering in the front, but what kind of rear suspension do you run? Is it three-link or long trailing arm? What kind of rear suspension do y'all run?
It's a three-link, but it's short now. I mean, I think a lot of the super late model guys here have gone to, like, what the dirt track guys run, where we run bird cages. So it's like a rotating rear end. It's like a rotating rear end, and then and that's what most of the guys have gone to around here.
Well, with that bird cage, you get a lot better forward bite with it, don't you?
Right, exactly, and that's what everyone struggles for here. Is, I mean, the more, that's what everyone complains about. The more forward bite you can get, the better. And these cars are so lightweight with such a high horsepower. I mean, at Toledo, we have right around, you know, 800, 825 horsepower, and you can just, you're just struggling to get that. You're struggling to get that forward bite when your car only weighs 2,700 pounds with a driver in it. So, it's all about trying to get the horsepower to the track.
That's pretty impressive power to weight ratio right there. I guess it's kind of like a dirt car where you're struggling to hook that horsepower up. What do you think, Chris?
Well, I'm trying to get my finger on exactly what makes this the Outlaw Super Lates, and what's kind of the difference in that, Frank?
Okay, the biggest thing is the body style. So they're pretty similar as far as the suspension and the frame, but the biggest one, what makes this an Outlaw, what makes our series an Outlaw car, is the wedge bodies. So what we run is more resembles a dirt late model car, where some of the other supers, like the CRA cars, the ARCA CRA series, they run a template body.
Right.
So you can go out and purchase that. With the Outlaw cars, there's not a manufacturer that makes an Outlaw body. You basically have to sit in the garage and bend the tin and make it yourself. So that makes it a little bit more challenging. But yeah, it makes it also very unique for the fans. So every car has its little unique style to it, a little bit of adjustments in the aerodynamics of the car. So you can put your little personal spin on each car.
That's, you know, Steve, it's amazing. You know, there, where I worked down at Hattiesburg Speedway, and of course I've been talking with the promoter down there, and their Outlaw Street class is, you know, there's a new 602 late model class coming up, and these guys don't want to be a part of the 602 late model, but this is the last of the old street stocks that we have in Mississippi, and they've become the Outlaw Streets, and so a couple of the guys, of course, you know, they want to put flat noses on it and or scoop noses on it and all, and this is one of the things that was that's kind of in the argument that these cars have their own personal touch. They are a little bit harder to put together, but at the same time they have such great recognition with the fans, and so, you know, you kind of want to keep it that outlaw street, and it seems, you know, that what he just said is exactly what I believe the promoter there is trying to get these guys to see, is, you know, it's that special touch that makes that class what it is, and having the cars look a little bit different, it does mean something on the fan base. I like that idea, sir. Thank you for sharing that with us, Frank.
Yeah, no problem. And, yeah, I mean, you see some of the fans' faces when they walk up to the car at an autograph session or something like that, and when they get close, you can really see the details of the body, and you can tell how much work is put into each body. And when you smash them, it is harder to put them together, but it makes you be a little bit more careful the second time you rebuild the nose or something like that.
You know, definitely. And you made a great point there. Guys are going to take a little bit better care of their equipment when they go and define things like your class is. And it kind of builds up the respect. Is this class almost kind of like a driverhood, you know, like a brotherhood, sisterhood? All of you guys are pretty close together, and y'all follow each other?
I mean, yeah, it is. I mean, you get close to any series that you run, so you get familiar with the drivers and the teams and the families that run with you. So, yeah, I mean, as you go from track to track, you're familiar with the people, and you get to know them really well. So, I mean, we spend so much time basically every weekend together. So, yeah, I would say it is a brotherhood, and, I mean, that's just been my entire life with the racing program ever since I was a little kid. I mean, it's kind of been like that. Whoever you race with, you become friends with, and you share stuff,
that's right.
And some of them are your enemies, and some of them are your friends. I mean, that's just how it works.
Some of them were your enemies,
yeah.
And they become your friends. Tell us what's underneath that hood, man. Tell us what you got. 800 horsepower is no joke.
Yeah, so we have two engine builders that we work with. We have Shadowwoods Race Engines out of Mount Clemens, Michigan. And then we have Francis Engineering, who builds our high horsepower engines. So the high horsepower is an SP2 motor. Yeah, like we said, right around 800 horsepower for the big track. Both Chevrolets. Aluminum block. They have to be carbureted, so no supercharger, no nitrous, nothing like that. And then we run a two-speed transmission, like a Jericho, or the super lightweight. Forget what it's called right now, but it's a two-speed transmission, super lightweight. Basically, all you got is a high and a low.
Almost like a sprint car. it's kind of fascinating to me the fact that you've got close to the same amount of horsepower as a Cup or an Xfinity Series car, but you're about 1,000 pounds lighter than they are. That's interesting to me that you can even get that horsepower hooked up, because, you know, you'll see cars Sunday in the Cup race spinning tires coming off the corner and on restarts and everything. I guess throttle controls a lot of driving a super late model. I guess that's something you have to master, and you're obviously pretty good at it because you can win at it. What pushed you in the direction of the super late model? What got you started in racing?
Well, I mean, back in 2010, I was racing street stocks, and it was basically a family operation at the time. It was my father, Ron, my mom, Lou, and my sister, Gina, and we would just run the local ARCA series at Flat Rock. And we really didn't have any real aspirations to go late model racing. I mean, the cost of it was just out of reach for as far as a family operation. So the only opportunity I had was to drive someone else's car, and I was approached by Dick Barker and Pat Moran, and Dick Barker's a longtime short track driver from the area. He raced Canada, Michigan, Ohio, Wisconsin, all over the Midwest, basically. And he approached me, and he wasn't into driving the race cars anymore, but he really wanted to own a team and go around racing still. And he was looking for, I guess you could say, someone to coach or someone upcoming through the ranks that he could coach, become a late-mile driver. So when he approached me, he kind of said, we'll do a test session. So we went out one Sunday, late fall, and he put me in the late model, and he saw I could do it. So he said, okay, I'll hire you. You come and work on the car every night, and we'll go racing. So we've been together 4 years now, and I couldn't thank those guys, Pat and Dick, enough for what they've done for me. So it's an opportunity that not a lot of people get. And when I look around the pits, I mean, it's mostly family-funded teams, and it's hard to compete. So we have a long list of really good sponsors. So we have Moran Chevrolet backing up, 4th Street Auto out of Royal Oak, Michigan, Pack Racing Springs, Gemini Electric, Painter Supply and Equipment Co., like I mentioned, Shadow Woods Race Engines, McQuaid Electric, Summers Marine, Diamond Pistons and Trend Performance, and also Van Dorn Racing Development. They build our chassis. They're out of the west side of Michigan, and Francis Engineering. And without them, I would never be able to do it. So my hat's off to them. I try to thank them as much as I can. And it's just everything's been going good the last couple years.
With your operation, Giovanni Racing, are you pretty much hands-on 7 days a week with your car? Do you are you really involved with the upkeep and the prep on your car?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty small crew. It's basically four guys. It's myself, Dick Barker, Pat Moran, Al Monk is basically the crew chief on the car. Like I mentioned, my dad, Ron, Jimmy Tucker, and this is a small group of people, and we're there at least three times a week working on the cars. We all have on jobs, and this is just our hobby, basically, and so we all have jobs to keep the family going and in our house and stuff like that. But, yeah, we meet three times a week, and then we're racing all day Saturday. So at least half the week we're there with the car whenever we're not working. So, yeah, we're heavily involved.
Ooh.
Frank, was your dad a driver? Or, you know, you said you've been involved since you were a kid.
Yeah, my dad was never a driver, but he always a huge IndyCar fan. And the story behind me getting going was he was looking for a race car for himself. He wanted to go road racing. And there's a track in the suburbs of Detroit, and it's called Waterford Hills. And there's a little quarter midget track outside. So when he went to go look at a car, I went with him. It was my grandpa, my dad, and myself. And we stopped at the quarter midget track out front. And he said, you know, looked at me and said, do you want to do this? And that at 5 years old or 4.5 years old, whatever I was, I said, yeah, I want to do this. So that's basically yeah. how it started. So I have to give, you know, my hat's off to him for giving up some of his aspirations to go racing to let me do it. And I couldn't have done any of it without him. And coming up through the quarter midget ranks and the legend cars and the street stocks, he's been a major, major part of my success. So, yep.
How old were you when you started the quarter midgets?
I was right at the age of five, so I had my first
wow.
quarter midget when I was four, and we started practicing out in the alleyways, and then right when I turned five, we started going indoor racing, and it's been every year, every summer since then, so 21 years now.
Awesome. That's beautiful, man.
Damn. You said you ran legend cars, so they're another car, like a super late model, that's got a big power to weight ratio difference in them. Is that one of the ways you learn throttle control? You can't just mat the gas and come off a corner with a legend car. You have to really work the throttle to get it hooked up. Did that help you prepare you for the super late model later on?
Yeah, I would say it had a part in it. I mean, a lot of people underestimate the Legend cars, and they are a handful to drive, I'll tell you. You know, the tires they put on them and the high horsepower, those cars are not easy to drive, and I think it did help me a little bit. You have to have really quick feet in a Legend car. You have to have, like, soft feet, I would call it. But, yeah, you have to be soft on the throttle, but you have to drive the cars really hard as well, and you can't be afraid to get them sideways. And same thing with the late model car. You gotta turn the car with the throttle, and that is something I picked up in the Legend car.
Yeah, that's a good point. A lot of people don't realize that, you know, it takes some talent to win in a Legend car. It's not an easy car to drive, and it's a very good class to learn how to drive in. I think they're cool cars. I think if you're going to be an asphalt racer, you need to run a Legend car and learn how to drive one. It'll definitely help you throughout your career.
Steve, that's an interesting point, because on the dirt track racing side, I would say that, you know, if you're planning on being, you know, groomed as a super late model driver, I think the best thing for a young and up and coming driver to do is get into a modified. It's lightweight, it's got a big motor, and if you can learn how to play the throttle, you might be a winner. If you can't handle that motor to weight ratio, then you probably don't have any business driving a super late model. So I think in both worlds, that's kind of true. I can see some relevance there.
Yeah, definitely so. We talked earlier about you getting the ARCA ride this year. Have you got any aspirations or thoughts of moving up to the upper tiers of template stock car racing, maybe getting into trucks or Xfinity or Cup?
I mean, yeah, that's always been a dream, but, I mean, it always goes back to one thing, and that's funding. So it's always, you know, trying to get your break with the one big sponsor that wants to see you do really well. And you know, I mean, to run one NASCAR race in the truck series, I mean, it's going to cost you close to $100,000 to do that. So, I mean, to get the funding for one race, I mean, that's the dream. And if there's anyone out there that's willing to put together a sponsorship package, you know, I'm more than willing to listen to it. But as of right now, I'm really focused on the super late model. We want to go forward and win some championships this year. And if there's an opportunity or two to run another ARCA car, maybe if it's with Hickson Motorsports or someone else, I'd be willing to do that too. But that's basically where we're at right now. I mean, I'm a little bit older now. I'm 27, just turned 27 yesterday. It was my birthday. So when you look at some of the younger drivers coming up at, you know, 16, 17 years old in the truck series, it's tough to compete with those guys, so especially without the funding.
Definitely. Good point there.
Yeah, definitely. So I know you're out knocking on doors and stuff trying to get sponsorship. Do you use social media a lot to try to secure sponsorship, or does social media help your racing program a great deal?
Yeah, I mean, any driver nowadays that's serious about it has to run their own social media. So I have everything from my own website. I have the Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I mean, I basically run my entire social media program, and I use those channels to promote my sponsors. So that's something you have to do nowadays. My website is www.frankgiovanni.com. If you just search Giovanni Racing or Frank Giovanni on any of the social media sites, I'll be there. So I welcome you to follow me on all those avenues, and it is something I use. And I, when I send out my sponsorship packet, I let them know that's part of the deal, is you're going to be promoted to, you know, thousands of people at a time on my social media sites, and I can share the numbers with them, and they want to see that. So when someone sponsors a car, they want to know what's in it for them, and that's something I try to provide with number backing and things like that, so they can see, hey, there are almost 2,000, 3,000 people seeing my advertisement every time that Frank or Giovanni Racing shares a post. So I try to work that in there, and some of the races are covered by a local cable station for the late model deal. And then ARCA is working out a deal with Fox Sports 1 and ASN to cover it nationally. So the Toledo race I was in was a nationally covered televised event. So that always helps to try to bring in the sponsors as well.
Yeah, definitely. So that's the thing about social media nowadays, is not only does it help on your end securing sponsorship and approaching sponsors and things like that, but it lets the sponsor get his name out more, get his brand out there more, and that's what they're looking for. That's what they're paying you for, is to promote their brand. So with so many more people that you can reach on social media, it really works on both sides of the fence for both people. It's, you know, like you said, it's the way you have to go nowadays. It's just, you know, it's the way it is, and you got to stay good with the times.
Definitely, and it gives us that avenue to work from. And analytics is the way everybody's going. Algorithm and analytics is the future, and it's good to see that other people are really picking up on it. It changes your promotion department single-handedly.
Yeah, definitely so. One more time, Frank, while we got a minute, give a shout-out to anybody you want to recognize or you want to mention on the air, you want to thank or anything. Let them know you're thinking about them and who you like, you know, who you appreciate.
I'd like to give a shout-out to the veterans. I know we have the holiday coming up this week. So I want to thank them. I mean, without them, we'll never be able to do the thing we love. So appreciate everything they've done, giving their life for our freedoms here. So that's one big shout-out I want to have. Mentioned my family. Like I said, without them, I'd never be able to do this. Dick Barker, Pat Moran, those guys put me in the late model, so I want to thank them. And all my sponsors. I think I was able to plug everyone during the interview. So I want to thank them, and I'm hoping that everyone comes back on board next year, plus a few more.
That's right.
Well, that's one of the things we try to do here on this show, is to give you a forum to promote your sponsors. That's cool. I really enjoy talking with you, Frank. It's I've had you on the show before, and I've always enjoyed talking with you. I follow you on social media. It's how I keep up with you and everything. And I wish you the best for 2017. Keep grinding away, and hopefully something will come out of your ARCA race and everything, and you can move on up like you want to. Appreciate you calling in.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys. I always enjoy coming on the show, and I'd be happy to come back anytime you guys want to have me. So thank you, and have a good 2017, and stay connected with me. So like I said, you can follow me on www.frankgiovanni.com or any of my social media sites. So thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, cool deal. We'll try to get you back on toward April, the beginning of the 2017 season, and see what you got planned and how things are going then. All right, Frank, thanks again for calling in, buddy, and we'll talk to you later on.
All right. Well, Steve, moving right along. Can you hear me?
Yeah, it was good to be able to talk to Frank again. He's a strong racer, and he's in a class of racers in the area that he races in, the Michigan, Ohio area, where super late model racing is pretty big. If you're in that area and you haven't seen them run, you need to really get out and check those cars out. They're high horsepower, low weight cars, and they haul the mail.
Definitely.
And let's switch over from asphalt fendered racing to open wheel dirt racing. Talk to our next guest. The champion of the ASCS series sprint cars.
No, he hasn't. I talked to him. It's Brian Bell. He's from Tennessee. Yeah, it was later part right there. I had to correct that there. But Brian took some time off there for a couple of seasons and come back, and he's had a great year this year. I thought that he was running the ASCS championship, but let me tell you something. The reason why is because he got quite a few wins in this area, but Brian corrected it and said that he's running for the big races, and he has a full-time job, works 40 hours a week, and looking forward to talking to him again. We've had him on our other show, and I think he'll be a great guest on here tonight.
Well, let's find out. He's here in the studio with us now. Brian Bell, how you doing tonight, buddy?
Hey, we're doing pretty good. How are you guys?
Oh, we're finer than hens, Steve, here. I'm kind of jealous. You race sprint cars in Tennessee in that area and everything, and I'm in North Carolina, your next door neighbor to Tennessee, and we get very little sprint car racing here in North Carolina, even though we have a multitude of dirt tracks here to choose from. How strong is sprint car racing in Tennessee and in your area?
Well, I feel like we have a pretty huge history of sprint cars in this area. You know, I feel like throughout the years we've brought up some really strong racers. Of course, the most notable would be Sammy Swindell. He's from, you know, not too far from where I live. And Riverside Speedway's got a long history that goes way back, I believe, into the 50s. And, you know, so we've brought up quite a few, you know, well-known and competitive racers. Sammy's brother, Jeff, you know, was out there for a long time. You know, gosh, the list is just, it's too long for me to even sit here and mention, but sprint car racing is doing well in this area. We get a lot of support from ASCS, and the USCS sanction comes into this area. We have two good local tracks at West Memphis, Riverside Speedway, and over in Little Rock, Arkansas, where we just finished up our short track nationals. They run weekly shows, and they work together, and they're very much keeping sprint car racing alive in this area, and for that I'm very grateful for.
Yeah, we have a guest that comes on, Tyler, T.J. Hughes, right? Is that one of the tracks he races at, Steve?
Yeah, he races all kinds of different classes. I think I've seen him in about every kind of race car they have out there.
T.J.'s a long-time listener and I mean, almost a co-host, couldn't we say there, Steve?
Oh, yeah.
We always enjoy having T.J. on. He's pretty descriptive. As a matter of fact, he's just now learning the sprint cars, and he's been able to kind of tell us about the difference and how the handling of the car is, where to get on the throttle at and all. Brian, you know, to further up on the introduction, you had a couple of years off, right? And this year has just been amazing for you. Tell us about it real quick.
Well, I feel like I had an opportunity to go work for a friend of mine as a crew chief. And, you know, I took the opportunity and we went out and I got to see sprint car racing from the other side of the fence, if you will. You know, I got to become a student of the car and get to watch it and study it and really start to try to maybe understand it from a different point of view. And at the time, you know, I was interested in furthering my knowledge, and I kind of was setting myself up for later in life. I knew that working on them was certainly something that I could do, you know, later in life. Where driving them kind of has a age limit to it, but you know, there's lots of great crew chiefs out there that, you know, can that still remain competitive much longer than they can as a driver. And so, you know, I kind of wanted to explore that. And but it actually turned out to really be beneficial to my driving, because once I got back in the car, I was really able to communicate back to my crew chief in a language that he could understand. I realized as a crew chief, you got to be able to receive information differently than you do as a driver. And so when my driver would come in and try to relay information to me, I would say, okay, like, now I see what it's like from this side. So now as a driver, I can come back and I can give a lot more detailed input on what the car's doing or what it needs to be better. What kind of attitude does it need? What kind of adjustments do we need to make? And it turned out to be incredibly beneficial to my team.
It kind of from the door, your season started off real good, right?
Yeah, I mean, right out of the – which, I mean, I'm very blessed to be on a really good team. You know, the company that I work for, FSR, it's their house car, and it's a really, really great car. I mean, there's – it's just put together very well. I drive for my dad. We own the business. I mean, he's been racing since the 70s, and, you know, very – very smart when it comes to building a car and putting all the pieces of the puzzle together to really give me something good. But yeah, right off the bat, I mean, I think we won our second race this year, and it was just, you know, we're all
attaboy.
Our jaws are on the, well, that must have been a fluke. You know, it was, you know, just kind of fell in our lap, and then the winds just kept coming, and we said, well, we might actually be doing something right.
Right, and you had a strong run the first night out at Hattiesburg Speedway, if I remember right, and you finished off the season strong as well.
Yeah, we well, the first night we went to Hattiesburg, got into the fence, but when we went back for Speed Week, we had a really good run going, and racing for the lead, and, you know, me and Hagar were putting on a great show and ran out of some real estate and got together, but, you know, I think that I just, you know, this year has kind of been an eye-opener for me as much as it kind of has for everybody else. You know, us as a team, I don't think that we realized how competitive we were going to be able to be. But, yeah, from go, things just kind of fell – they just kind of fell in place, and just the chemistry was just there, and the car was fast, and the finishes and the wins just started coming.
Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, you mentioned you're in the house car, and it's a family-run business. Are you heavily involved in the day-to-day maintenance of your car, or are you more working on the business side and then racing on the weekend?
Yeah, we kind of have to work to separate. And that's difficult to do, because what you want to do is spend all day working on the race car, but what you realize that you have to do is keep the business going, because that's what helps fund that race car. So we get a lot of support with people that we do business with, and they bring business to us, and we try to share and build on those relationships. But, you know, during the day, we kind of have to try to steer our focus towards the business. And I stay pretty heavily involved in that. But, you know, kind of once that final bell rings at the end of the day, we kind of shift gears and get involved with the racing stuff. So I'm pretty heavily involved on both sides of it. You know, I really like to have my hands on the race car. I really like to know and be involved with what's going on with it. You know, Gary kind of makes the decisions, but, you know, I want to be there to kind of understand what he's doing so that, you know, everything just kind of meshes together and I have a really good understanding of what to expect out of the car and try to help us both work in a direction.
You mentioned that being a crew chief gave you a different perspective on how to set up a car and how to relay and communicate what your car is doing and what you want it to do. And you're also heavily involved during the week with the car. Do you feel like that's another advantage in your favor, knowing your cars from end to end the way you do? Is that something else that just helps you be a better driver?
I think at some point every successful driver has had their hands in a maybe not the race car that they're running, but you've got to know your equipment, and you've got to know how it works, and you know what it does, and you have to know how the changes that you make are going to affect the car. Do I think that, you know, Donnie Schatz needs to be out there doing bar maintenance every day? No, I don't think that that's, you know, going to be. But he has a very clear understanding of how that car is assembled and, you know, what makes it tick. And I think that that's the part that I'm still, you know, trying to not maybe say, maybe fully understand, but understand to every tiny detail. You know, I just like to be involved with it.
Now, Steve, you know, you being a former crew chief, you didn't have much driving experience. Did that kind of put you in a position, or did you have some wheel time experience?
I've never raced a
lap.
How
does a crew chief wing it? How does a crew chief wing it that's never driven?
It's like Brian said, you look at things from a different perspective. I can understand what a driver's saying, you know, driving by the seat of his pants and what he's feeling and what he wants and everything. But I was fortunate enough to learn from Harry Hyde how to look at a race car on a track, how to go stand in the corner and watch your car through corner entry, through the middle and through the exit, the stance of the car and the line the car's running and how the driver's hands are working, and putting all that together to correlate with what the driver's telling you. You know, if the driver comes in and says, you know, my car's tight in the middle, and you've been down there watching him and you've seen that piece of white tape at 12 o'clock on the steering wheel the drivers use to line their wheels straight ahead, you see that piece of tape disappear because he's turned so hard left, you can, it helps reinforce what the driver's telling you, and you just, you kind of use the driver as a tool. The driver input's very important because you want the driver to be comfortable in the car, but at the same time, what he's feeling, you want to be able to back up with what you've seen, what your tire temperatures are, and things like that. So, you know, it's kind of, one thing I never did in all my years of crew chief, I never tried to tell a driver how to drive because I never raced. I never drove in a race. So, you know, there's no way I can tell them, but.
Now, Brian, reverse the roles, because here you had a little bit of you had a lot of driving experience, but you had a little bit of crew chief. You kind of learned to be a crew chief. Tell us about that transition right there. I think that's kind of where the story is right now.
Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, and I agree with what he said a lot about being able to watch the car and the attitude of it, and you know what you're looking for. And you can go back and discuss with the driver and say, this is what I see. Tell me what you feel. And you can come to some kind of – a lot of times you come to an agreement, always. But, you know, that's the nature of it. And well, this is what I see. You know, like he said, you know, he comes in, he says, I'm really free from the center off. And I say, well, what I see is that you're really tight on entry and you're forcing the car to rotate and forcing a free situation. So we need to free up on entry. So – but one of the most important things that I learned as a crew chief is, as cliche as it sounds, is that how every driver is different, because the guy that I went to work for didn't drive anything like I did. And so he didn't need his car set up the way that I needed mine set up.
Wow.
And so when I first showed up, I said, this is the magic. I waved my magic wand over the car and I said, it's fast. And we went out there and we weren't fast. And I said, well, you know, you got to drive it different. You got to drive it different. And it's just not what I needed to be doing. And I learned over time through the next year that I need to give him what he needs, not what I need. Don't set the car up like you want it. Set it up like he wants it. And so that really taught me about doing what the car needs and not what you just think is right. And so that was one of the big important lessons I learned as a crew chief, And I don't know how necessarily I've carried that over as a driver, maybe to the point where that I don't have a monkey see, monkey do attitude anymore. I say, well, so-and-so is doing this and so-and-so is doing that, so that's what I need to do. There's not a magic formula for everybody. You just got to, when your gut instinct tells you that the car needs something, you just need to go with it.
Yeah, that's the thing. It doesn't matter how good a setup you got or how fast your car is. If the driver's not comfortable driving the car, if he doesn't feel like he can bury it going into the corner and bring it on through the corner, you're not going to be able to get maximum performance out of it. A great example of that that I remember is when I was working with Tim Richmond. We were in the race, and Harry Hyde had made some changes on the car between practices, and he was telling Tim what he had changed and why he made the changes and everything, and Tim just kind of interrupted him and said, "Harry," he said, "if you'll just make it turn left at the end of the straightaway, I'll handle it the rest of the way through." And that was Tim's driving style, and that was one reason they worked so good together, is Tim had total confidence in Harry's ability to set the car up. And, you know, he went out knowing in his mind that he could drive the wheels off that car and the car would stay under him. And that's something I've kind of carried with me all through the years. You know, you got to have the driver mentally comfortable driving the car to get that top lap speed out of them.
Brian, tell us about how you got your start, man.
I mean, I was kind of just grown up into it. I remember my dad said that his dad used to take him out to Riverside Speedway, the one at track over in West Memphis, and when he was a kid, and he just went out there and just kind of fell in love with it. It just, I think the... really appealed to him. And as he got older and he got out of high school, he said, "I went and got me a job and I started saving my money up." And he said, "I just one day just went and bought a car." And I want to say that if he didn't get his first one from Red Bug, he got his second one, and he just went and bought it, and he just went to the racetrack, and he said, "And I showed up and I didn't have a clue what I was doing." And he was like, "And I was just determined that I was going to figure it out." And it didn't take him long. And so, of course, he was just addicted to the dirt racing. He did a little bit of asphalt racing, but came back to the dirt. And then when I grew up, you know, I just grew up in sprint car racing, and that's just what I wanted to do. I can't tell you what exactly it is that appeals to me about it. I think it's just overall just the ability of the cars, the speed, the power, just the I don't know. It's all those
you
things.
You can hear it in your voice, man. I mean, you really
yeah.
You dig what you do, and can't you, Steve? I mean, just you can hear the passion in his voice, man. I mean, you really appreciate and love what you do. You're doing what you want to do, and that's awesome.
Yeah, and that's one of the privileges that I have, is that, you know, our focus in life, you know, is racing. I mean, we own a company that's focused around racing. We build, you know, radiators and other, you know, parts and things like that for race cars. And so, you know, we get to pick where we want to go and what we want to race. You know, and sprint cars is what we love, and sprint cars is what we're going to race. And, you know, we're not forced to follow, as from a career point of view, you're kind of forced to follow a path that's going to provide for you as a career. Where for us, we get to do this as a hobby, and we get to race when we want to, where we want to, and what we want to. And so it's from that perspective, it really is a privilege, in my opinion, to be able to do exactly what it is you love to do.
I'm telling you, it's kind of...
Yeah, that, impressive. I was just sitting there thinking, if I was in your shoes and had all this in my favor racing, I would have a hard time driving a sprint car simply because I would have a boner every time I got in it. It'd be so great. I mean,
you can't have anything taught in the steering wheel, and that's certainly not going to help out at all.
I can't believe it.
You're pretty comfortable where you're at now. What is the future going to hold for you, Brian? Are you looking to step up your program and get back to running more full time, or do you like running pick and choose races?
What's in the future for you? Yeah, I mean, I kind of like where we are now. You know, we're on a regional level, you know, and you know, we get to some of the national shows that are in our area. You know, we were able to go and compete well at Short Track. We went to Wheatland, Missouri, and got to really enjoy that experience about a month ago. I would love to have an opportunity to do some 410 racing, mostly just because I just want to see what it's all about. You know, I grew up around 360 racing. That's all I've ever done. I hear so many things about 410 drivers just saying it's just a whole nother level. Like, you can do so much more with the race car. You have so much more to work with. It's so much more on the driver. Out of curiosity, I would love to have some of that experience. I'm not sure that I would say I would turn down an opportunity if somebody wanted to offer a full-time ride, but I just don't think that in the long term that's going to be the career choice for me. I think I enjoy sprint car racing as a very serious hobby. I enjoy the business that we're in and the work that we do, and so I want to kind of keep that as my career focus. But as far as doing anything more, I would like to just race a little bit more next year, and maybe just try to compete more, a little more on a national level, like in this area, not necessarily a full-time schedule.
I heard that. While we got a minute, give a shout-out to your sponsors or crew or your family, shop dog, whoever you want to recognize while we got some time.
Yeah, I'm really proud of the fact that this whole racing, my whole race team is very family oriented. You know, me and my dad work
very
on the
good.
Car together. We race, and you know, all of our family goes with us when we race. They help out. We hang out together. We work together. You know, we're a very family oriented race team, and so we learn to suffer the losses and enjoy the victories together. But that's one thing that I really love about racing as a whole is that you see so many families. It's a family thing. And so, as you get older and you grow and life goes on, sometimes families kind of go their own way, but this is something that really keeps us together. And just to tie that in, also back with my business too, you know, FNCar Racing Products, we started out really just because racing was our passion. Racing radiators is what we did, but we've since then really like expanded into custom street rod radiators and, for older cars, for newer cars, for all kinds of different applications where we can help people with their cooling needs. And it all just ties into the racing thing. So very fortunate personally to have a great family that supports me in the racing, but also that it's something we can all enjoy together. I just love that about it.
Well, we'd like to help you sell a couple of radiators. Go ahead and give that website where our listeners can get a hold of you. It sounds like you're the right guy and have the market sewed up there. So make sure you share that website.
Yeah, it's fsrproducts.com, and we build aluminum radiators for anything. I mean, we do them for tractors, for old cars, for newer model Camaros and Trailblazers. I mean, it's most people think we're just a racing company, but we're so much more than that. There's not really anything that we can't build if you have an application for it. So
I'm telling you.
How else on social media can you keep up with what you're doing, Brian?
Yeah, our racing and our business is kind of, we tie it in together. It's Twitter's FSR product. You can also look us up on Facebook under the same name. It'll come up. Our formal company name is Four Seasons Racing Edition. If you see them, that'll be what you're looking for. You know, and we are always putting, you know, keeping up with people that we partner in business with that support our company and run our products, and also new things that we come out with. You know, as racers, we're able to develop products that we feel like that suit what we need. You know, we really get to product test our own products, and we get to come back and say, hey, this is terrible, or this is great, or we need to change this, or somebody should make a tool for this or a hanger for that. You know, it's just, there's so many things that we do that, you know, people should check out. If you're a racer at all, there's something that we make that you might be surprised.
Cool deal. Really good talking with you tonight, Brian. I'm glad I got a chance to meet you, and definitely keep up with what's going on with you in 2017. If you're at one of the shows and TJ Hughes is there, stop in, say hello to him, maybe offer him a little advice on sprint car driving. Tell him Big Sweat sent you. And we appreciate you coming on tonight, and good luck next year with what you're going to do.
Thank y'all very much, and I'll be sure to track TJ down this weekend. And if anybody ever sees us at a race somewhere, by all means, come up and say hi. You know, I've never met a stranger in my life, so it'll be good to meet anybody.
Well, I tell you, TJ's that same way.
He is. Two peas in a pod.
I tell you, it's like Brian said before. You know, it's the way racers are, the family atmosphere that goes along. Everybody gets along good. And it is truly the only sport where your competitors will help you beat them. You know, they don't do that kicking ball and stuff. But by golly, if your car's not handling good, you can go ask another driver, and he'll be glad to help you out, even if it means getting outrun by you. So,
Brian, I worked next to an announcer that was a crew chief.
And we'll keep up with what's going on with you, buddy.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot. Good night. That's Brian Bell. Ladies and gentlemen, another hot shoe that we got to talk with tonight and learn a little something about sprint car racing. I mean, you know, that's the great thing about racing with Big Sweats. What I like, I get the opportunity to learn something every time I have a guest on. So I'm real thankful for that. Yellow caution flag, tell everybody how they can keep up with what you're doing and what you got going on.
Well, you can find us on Twitter at Flag of Caution, and you can find us on Facebook, Chris Creighton, and Yellow Caution Flag. Just type in Yellow Caution Flag on any Google server, and you will see the list of social sites that we have put together for the Racing Fan Experience. I want to thank y'all for listening to Racing with Big Sweat. It's always a great show, working next to Steve Billmeyer, and, of course, our producer, Mr. CJ Sports, 110 Nation Sports. Guys, there's plenty of material to listen through. 110, just follow their website, and you can keep track with us every Thursday night, Racing with Big Sweat. It's really a great show, Steve, and as always, just glad to be a part of it, man.
I'm glad to have you here, Chris. I really enjoy sitting in with you, hearing things more from a dirt track perspective. That's what you're more familiar with, where I'm more familiar with asphalt. I think it's a good combination, a good yin and yang, so to speak. Thanks for sitting in with me, and I'll be talking with you next week. Looking forward to it.
Good deal.
Mr. CJ Sports, let everybody know what you got going on and what's happening over at the 110 Nation. This man covers any kind of sports. I mean, he's just not limited to racing. He knows it all. Tell us what's happening, CJ.
Okay. First of all, I want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight here, Racing with Big Sweat. It was great to listen to those two great guests and be able to be part of that tonight. Tomorrow night, right here on the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network, we got Hot Laps with Stats. We got Paul Massey of New England Antique Racers, and Janice Blewett's holding the John Blewett's the third annual memorial events on November 19th. Two great guests for tomorrow night. And make sure you guys also tune in every Monday through Wednesday for the 110 Nation Sports Show. We kick it off at 7 o'clock. And check us out on Facebook, 110 Nation Sports.
There you go, folks. And if you want to keep up with me, and I'm sure you do because I'm a pretty man, you can follow me on you can follow me on Twitter at Big Sweat 4, where they call me the NASCAR heartbreaker and home wrecker. On Facebook, I have an excellent, if I do say so myself, racing Facebook group, NASCAR and Other Racing. We talk about all types of racing. We do NASCAR, we do Formula One, NHRA, Lucas Oil, dirt late models, sprint cars. If it's got four wheels and a motor and it's two of them together trying to get from point A to point B, we're going to talk about it. We have group race threads for the televised cup races and such where we all get together during the race and talk and cheer on our driver. So if you're looking for a good racing group experience, come join NASCAR and Other Racing. We'd be glad to have you. And on Monday nights from 6 o'clock to 7 o'clock, it's myself and Mr. CJ Sports. We do Rubbin' Is Racing, where we review the previous weekend NASCAR action. We talk NASCAR only on Monday night, but if you'll tune in this coming Monday night, you'll hear our thoughts and perspectives on what happened at Phoenix this weekend. So check that out at 6 o'clock. And on Thursday nights, come back right here, Racing with Big Sweat. We do local short track racing here from all across the country. So if you know of a local short track driver you think needs a little recognition or maybe could do some sponsor hunting or some sponsor shout outs over the radio, send me a message and we'll be glad to get them on. Well, I can tell by the clock on the wall we're running a little bit over, but what the hell, we don't care. We're having fun. So thanks again for tuning in, folks. I'm glad you sat in with us. Come back and see us next Thursday night on Racing with Big Sweat. Good night, y'all.
It's going to be huge.